So before we finish today, if I don't mention these two words again at the very end of the session, please remind me. Just say, hey, you have something to talk about engage and play. So I think we had great discussion. I appreciate everyone's engagement. And for the most part, we talked about those three, joy, kindness, and compassion. We didn't specifically talk about equanimity. However, we did in a sense when explaining the difference between jhanas, practice of deep absorption, versus mindfulness, the practice of openness and a clear discernment of our experience. But that key point, if you could remember anything from today's session, would be the difference between single-pointed concentration, samadhi, jhanas, that kind of practice, versus mindfulness, openness to experience. And that openness to experience also includes the clear discernment or the clear recognition that everything about our experience is impermanent, is without self. If we remember that much, then when we encounter, whether it's intentionally or unintentionally, encounter experiences through meditation, different feelings, from the feeling of the body disappearing that we mentioned, to the feeling of maybe feeling like we're being crushed, unpleasant feeling, versus a feeling of spaciousness, wide openness of mind, feeling this great love almost pour from us, from within us, to always see that as the changing states, conditioned states. That state came about because of certain conditions. Those conditions will never be again. Maybe a similar state, but never the same state. Every state of mind, of body, mind, experience is a formation. There's only one thing that the Buddha talked about as the so-called unconditioned, unformed, or the deathless. Poetic term, the deathless. The birthless and the deathless. Do you want to know what that is? No? Okay, forget it. So, going on. But he made a distinction between conditioned states of body, mind, versus what could be described as the unconditioned experience. It's almost, again, it can be a brain twister. But there's an easy way to understand it. As an analogy, all of us in this room, including all the objects in this room, they're formations. The space of this room is not formed or created by anything. As an analogy, the space of the room is not created by something. And the objects themselves, though, they move, they change, they form, they disperse. Space of the room is not conditioned. No matter what kind of thing is put in the room, we can say, space is okay with it. You throw garbage in this room, you spill stuff on the floor, the space is okay with it. Maybe we're not okay with it, because we have to clean it up or we have to sit in it. But the space allows everything to be. And the space is not disturbed, moved by anything. It's an analogy. Don't take it too literally. If we take it too literally, we'll start to think, aha, so there is a universal consciousness somewhere behind everything, and I just want to see it. Once I see it, that'll be the deathless. That's another product of imagination. So it's an analogy. In terms of experience, when a person can have direct perception, pure direct perception, of objects as they are, conditioned, changing, empty of self. The ability to perceive that, we'd say, is deathless. The capacity to perceive formations, as selfless, as impermanent, that capacity is not born or dying. It's not a formation. In later Buddhism, it's called Buddha nature. The capacity for awakening. It's not a thing. It's not like I got my Buddha nature behind me. It's the capacity for insight, the capacity for perfect mindfulness, and the capacity for compassion, completely natural, fluid compassion. In a way that Thich Nhat Hanh describes as, when our left hand gets cut, gets damaged or injured, our right hand goes to take care of it. Very naturally, very spontaneously. There's a need, it's just done. Our right hand doesn't say, here I come, I'm being compassionate for you, hold on. You know? Or, you know, I'm always compassionate for you, why are you always the one to get hurt? You know? It's not a matter of knowing I'm being compassionate or I'm being wise. It's just what needs to be done is done. And the ability to perceive suffering and deal with it, compassion, wisdom, that capacity is Buddha nature. It's often described as two wings of a bird. This character, Bei, is representative of compassion. This character, Zhi, representative of wisdom. Sometimes, if we say it's two wings of the bird, it's not quite accurate. Because even if the bird is missing a wing, it could still be alive, could still walk and function. It's more accurate to say it's two halves of a bird. There's no bird if you cut it in half. It's not going to be a bird anymore. You can't just have compassion. It's really not possible. If it's just compassion, it's probably not really compassion. Maybe it's just pity, or maybe it's just feeling bad. If you cut the bird in half and you say, well, a person has wisdom, but they're not so compassionate, that's questionable. Is a person truly wise if they don't have any compassionate response? What kind of person would that be? Is it real wisdom or is it just kind of a coolness? Some people are much more cooler, even tempered, even very intelligent, very sharp, and very cool. I was just thinking of a debater that I saw. He's so good at debating. Why? Because he never gets ruffled. You never see this guy get ruffled. Everybody else gets ruffled. But he's like, well, you see, the problem is this. So cool and very sharp and intelligent. Everybody else is, they can't believe what he's saying and can't believe how they're being destroyed by his argument all the time. I won't mention names. Very cool. However, this may just be my perception, but there seems to be a lacking of warmth with that debater. Very cool, sharp, but seems to be so sharp that kind of knows he's disturbing the other person, getting them riled up. And just his character, I don't know. It's not so warm and friendly. Could just be my perception and my prejudice. However, in principle, if a person only has wisdom, it's not really possible. If there is truly wisdom there, if there's true clarity and mindfulness, there's just a natural response to be caring, considerate, understanding, and have the capacity to resolve others' suffering. So I don't know, we never had the opportunity to see someone like the Buddha debate, and he did have debates all the time. If you read some of those Nikaya sutras, I think what's so wonderful is there's a lot of dialogue and debate. And it's like, wow, yes, he's very intelligent. He sees where their point is, what they're trying to say. He presents his point. But oftentimes, not every time, but oftentimes the debater is so moved. It's not a debate anymore. They become moved by his kindness. They tried to rip him apart, and it says, you know, such and such debater was going to, you know, cut down the Buddha and embarrass him in front of all of his students. And by the end, he was like, you know, they were so sorry that they came with that intention, because they just want to be friends or disciples of the Buddha because of his kindness within the debate. It's not every time, because there were debates where the person was still unhappy. Even his own disciples. At the end of the discourse, all of the disciples were unhappy. There are sutras like that. The Buddha finished his talk and the disciples were not very pleased. However, in principle, if we are really clear and able to be free from our self-attachment and rigid views, compassion is there. If we're able to be truly compassionate and have that warmth yet skillfulness, that's wisdom. So it's one bird rather than two wings of the bird. It's one bird. You can never have half a bird. This is the equanimity of what the Buddha is talking about. A bit different than the equanimity of samadhi. The equanimity of samadhi, we could say, is being very cool. Super cool in mind. Completely placid. Like a perfectly still lake. That's the equanimity of samadhi. There's no function, though. A person in samadhi is just like a stone. Whereas wisdom is also perfect equanimity of mind. However, it's like the lake that's reflecting things. Things are reflected on the surface. It has a function, and it can engage with other beings skillfully. So that so-called equanimity is not just stillness. We could look at it as stillness within movement. Interdependence. Within stillness, there is movement. Within movement, there is stillness. That's the equanimity of the Buddha, or equanimity of Buddha Dharma. In this stillness, can there be thoughts? What do you think? Yes or no? Of course. If there were no thoughts, there would be no Dharma talks to start with. There'd be no Dharma. Or there would be no response. Thought is just a kind of response, a tool of the mind. One of the many tools, one of the sixth consciousnesses we talk about. So if we look at the eight consciousnesses, they're usually described as eight consciousnesses. Consciousnesses? Yeah, eight consciousnesses with functions that create attachment and suffering. That's the one side. Let's see, that's the one kind of function, problematic function, function of recycling our habitual tendencies, recycling and being lost in them. And that kind of functioning is very messy. Kind of consciousness is scattered, it's disturbed, it's got all these kinds of stuff happening. However, the very same eight consciousnesses, if we look at them from the same manifestation only teachings, when it's awakened consciousness. It's not called consciousness, it's just referred to as wisdom. From eight consciousnesses, it's then described as eight wisdoms, eight functions of wisdom. From consciousness, the messiness of the mind, when it's transformed and functioning well, it's the wisdom. Eight wisdom. And the eighth consciousness, which was called store, gave it a new name, call it mirror wisdom. Not just mirror wisdom, but great and vast mirror wisdom, where everything is reflected. All phenomena are clearly reflected in the mirror. It actually should have no edges, so imagine this is like an edgeless mirror reflecting everything perfectly, and all the other consciousnesses functioning smoothly. The grasping, obsessive hand of the seventh consciousness is now a discerning and quite useful hand, well-trained hand. The sixth and the fifth and so on. It's the same mind. Function is now wisdom. So there's movement. Function is movement. It's a living being. But we still say it's equanimity. It's unmoving. That unmoving aspect is the deathless. Equality or equanimity. Amidst all that movement, it's unmoved, undisturbed. The undisturbed capacity is Buddha nature. Yeah, so the arising of the bodhicitta or mindset of compassion we talked about. It arises because of the transformation of suffering or the resolving of suffering. But then emptiness, you know, this term in Buddhism which we didn't use too much, but emptiness, how does that fall into all of this? It's such a dark term in a way, emptiness. It's like if you study Buddhism, you can realize emptiness. It's like, is it inviting? Is that nice? Is emptiness nice? Something I want to experience? So far what we were talking about, this wisdom, compassion, the manifestation teachings, it's speaking in positive terms, right? Describing the mind in positive terms. Emptiness is using a negative term to describe the same thing. Emptiness is actually the same of what we were talking about, just a negative term. And it came from some sutras, the origin of that term or concept are from sutras like the Heart Sutra, the Diamond Sutra. Saying things that in the Diamond Sutra, it says there's no such thing as the awakened mind. There's no such thing as the perfect awakened mind. When people first found these sutras, they were like laughing. They were like, this isn't a real Buddhist sutra. This is ridiculous. It's just saying there's no this, there's no that. What is this? But to understand the context of emptiness, it's just a means to help us, again, not be bitten by the snake. Because whenever there's a term, whenever there's a great mirror wisdom, it's so easy to want to see it or get it. So the emptiness teachings are reminding us, once you have a concept of it, you have to get rid of that. It's no such thing. So emptiness means the emptiness of thingness, emptiness of self. There's no self. It doesn't mean there's nothing. Everything is here, obviously. There's just no self. There's no fixed thing. From the most concrete forms to the most subtle kind of consciousness, there's nothing that's fixed. Once we fixated on it, we're in trouble. We're stuck. So emptiness is helping us to empty out our fixation. There's no mirror wisdom. There's no suffering, so don't feel so bad. There's no wisdom, so don't keep chasing after it. So Buddha nature is empty nature. It's Dharma nature. Buddha nature, it's not a thing. It's just the fact that our suffering is empty. We have the capacity for insight. The capacity of everything being empty is Dharma or reality. All these different terms in Buddhism, it's pointing at the same thing, just from a slightly different perspective. Buddha nature, manifestation, I'm talking in positive terms. Emptiness, negating everything to help us not get too stuck on it. That's Dharma. That's suchness. So we should eventually throw all this stuff out and be mindful. Chris, do you have your hand up?
I was just going to say that maybe emptiness can, you can also say maybe fullness as well for the same thing.
Hmm. How so?
Fullness.
Hmm. Could you say more?
No.
I agree with you.
No. Fullness.
Yeah.
Hey, you want to say it? I think it would be valuable to hear. Okay. Well, we could say everything is empty of self, empty of permanence, but it's full of everything else. The all in the one and the one in the all. Every single thing is full and nourished by everything else. How could a flower grow if it was just by itself? It's impossible. A flower is a flower because of everything that's nourishing it. And the flower nourishes other things.
This resonates so much more for me.
I was always thinking about emptiness as like all the possibilities are open. Like still potential for everything is still there.
Hmm. Yeah.
For me, it's not really clear this concept of emptiness.
Hmm. In what way?
Please, add one more sentence.
Sure.
To this.
Yeah. Sure.
Yeah, an example.
Hmm.
Another example.
Okay. Maybe somebody else could illustrate another example, make it more clear for us all. Yeah.
So, Martina is made up of her parents. So, she's made up of this intervenedness, this, not just, she's not just one, she's made up of this continuation. Yeah.
Hmm.
Yeah, okay.
So you're not just Martina, you're all the formations of everyone who came before you.
Yeah, but this was clear already since a few days, but emptiness.
Yeah.
We are talking about emptiness. This is not emptiness to me. This is
much
presence for sure, not non-presence.
What?
I understood emptiness related with no self.
Hmm.
No, like.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But I think is a wrong word to use. But if it is related to no, to the.
It's exactly related.
Of, okay,
yeah,
then
yeah.
I understand.
It's equal
even
to.
Even if I'm not agree with
the word.
Utilization of
yeah,
this
it's.
Word.
Yeah, it's equal to. It's
okay.
Equal to everything we were saying,
okay.
And it's equal to being mindful.
Okay.
So, could be a bad word. A lot of people have said it's not really the right word. Emptiness. Some people have used the word spaciousness. But the Chinese word, it's interesting, for emptiness is kong, which in some context means space.
Okay.
Not that it's just space itself, but like you were saying,
yeah.
Space means there's possibility.
Yeah, exactly.
Space.
Mm.
But also, if you put a microscope to see what's in the space, you would see it's not emptiness, exactly. There's so much between space.
Mm.
It's like, as we were talking before about the fascia, you can't differentiate where the fascia ends and the connective tissue begins and then the organs begin. There's, you can't find the ending in the beginning.
Yeah.
Mm.
Mm-hmm. Or maybe it's like an empty space, like an empty room where there was a past and there is going to be a future, like people passing through, experiencing this space in a certain way and then leaving and then other things comes under experience.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so it's not a space of opposites, like here's space and then there's no space here. Space, if we say emptiness is space, it means that because we can move this here, that's spaciousness. The fact, the potential that this whole room can have things and move things back and forth. And we would even say that if this whole room was cluttered with furniture to the ceiling, there's still spaciousness. If it was full to the ceiling, there's still spaciousness. Why? Because it still can be moved. So the constant potential or relationship change.
I was thinking, this right now, I was thinking that actually you can also decide that you take all this room apart and there is even more space. This is just enough stuff. But what I wanted to tell you about the emptiness is it's an old Jewish like story. Well, I just make it short and not precise, but like the person comes to the rabbi and he's like, I have problems, blah, blah, blah. But never mind. What the rabbi does, it's like he takes the tea and he pours in his cup,
mm-hmm.
and the cup is already full.
Yeah.
But he continues,
mm-hmm.
and then like the message in the end, it's like if you're full, because every time that the rabbi told him something, the person was like saying blah 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 blah, blah. And he says like if you come full. I cannot put anything inside.
But this is also Zen story. I saw a video of this monk doing this.
It must be in every culture.
Yeah.
Yeah? Mm. I think every culture has the tea story, yeah?
Coffee.
Mm. Coffee.
Coffee.
Or beer. You can't get drunker if... Wait. Yes, you can. You can get drunker.
Yeah, it fits perfectly to the thing.
Mm. So that example is a wonderful, you know, that makes it, takes the concept, the philosophical concept, back to a practical realm. If our mind is so-called full, that's when we're constantly attached and fixated to ourselves, worried about ourselves, worried about what we want, what we don't want. That's a mind that's overflowing with thoughts, versus an empty mind doesn't just mean, you know, it's a mind where you can engage, but you can also listen. You can talk, you can listen, you can interact, but no bumpy ride, or no suffering. Impermanence, yeah? Yeah. Impermanence is wonderful. If there was no impermanence, nothing could grow. And this is equanimity. Person who sees emptiness, or person who sees the wonder of impermanence. Person who sees the fullness, interbeing of things. Their mind is at ease.